This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salatu as-salamu ala ashraf al-mursaleen, Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man tabi'ahu bi ihsanin ila yawm al-deen. Sisters and brothers, we started this course with problems. And I wanted to do that because we were at the beginning. Problems meaning trying to be realistic as much as possible, appreciating that people commit adultery, people change from disbelief to belief, people change lifestyle, hence U-turn, people encounter problems, but they succeed in them. This is more or less the norm, isn't it? This theme here now, aspiration, I've already now, already some are frustrated with the examples that I've mentioned. But with aspiration, maybe a lot of you will be frustrated. But that's the nature of aspiration. That's the nature of the very meaning of the word in Arabic, and that is himma. Not everyone has himma. Not everyone wants to change the earth. Not everyone wants to make a difference. Well, I must maybe rephrase that. Well, everyone wants, but not everyone really does it. Well, okay, maybe everyone does it, but not everyone persists in doing it. So I just want to dramatize to you this concept of himma and high aspiration and say to you that my target audience now, and because we are coming at the end of the course, I'm beginning to narrow my target audience now. This theme is not necessarily compatible with everyone. So if you feel that that's not me, that's not a problem. This is for people who are high flyers, not in dunya, but in everything in life and in akhirah. This is to a sister here that is sitting here that is willing to do something that all of us one day will say, wow. Was this the sister that attended this course 2 years ago? Yes. What happened to her? Now she's doing this and this and this and this. I hear a lot of stories. What happened to this? Oh, she got married and now she has a baby. Excellent. Excellent. I'm not undermining that. What happened to this brother? Oh, brother, alhamdulillah, he's working now in this. Excellent. Very good. But when you hear that this brother now, or this sister now is doing so and so and so and so, something that is extremely unique, this is really a source of admiration. Let me then tell you what I mean with the word himma and high aspiration. And again, these are the paradigms that I look into this theme through. Number one, himma or aspiration or high aspiration. I like himma because it's not like tumuh or aspiration, but let's say high aspiration. High aspiration or himma is the highest level of aspiration. And therefore, those who attain it are a minority. They could be 5, they could be 2, they could be 3 in a Muslim population of 2 or 3 million. That is the people of himma. Number 2. There were lots of women who attained the highest level of ambition, and in many cases, higher than the ambitions of most men. And when I say to you, those are minority, gender is not an issue here. What is an issue is the number. So I'm talking about 5. It begins to be silly, therefore, to ask me 5 men or women. No, 5 human beings on the top of humanity. And therefore, if that is the case, then it begins to be acceptable to find a woman on the top of humanity. Number 3, high aspiration is an attitude in life that could be developed within time. This is not to frustrate you. You are not born genetically with himma. This is the gene of aspiration. No, it's a developed process. Himma is an attitude in life that could be developed with time, commitment, and discipline. No one is a loser forever. No one is always making fool of himself forever. There are conceptions here that needs to be changed. And at the moment that they change, you can be among this minority club of him. These are the lenses that I'm looking through when I discuss him. And let me at the outset mention to you, and here I'm going to talk to you about three stories. All of them are fascinating. And I'm going to begin to tell you a story of a woman that no one knows her name. But she was extremely famous during her time. Some historians say that her name is Su'ayra al-Asadiyya. And she was from Habasha, or Abyssinia, or Ethiopia. And she was known as Zufar. But these are speculations. No one is sure. Okay, look at this story now. Let's zoom into her life. Ata was a well-known scholar based on the knowledge that he inherited from a well-known companion who is called Ibn Abbas. Ata ibn Abi Rabah says, "Once I was with my teacher, Ibn Abbas, and a black woman passed by. Ibn Abbas said to me, 'Do you want me to show you a woman from heaven? Do you want me to show you a woman from Jannah walking on earth?' What would you say if I told you, 'Do you want me to show you someone who's going to heaven, to Jannah?'" Of course, here we cannot compare, but I'm just trying again to make you think. Ata ibn Abi Rabah said, "Yes, of course, show me." And then she passed, an old woman, old black woman. She passed. He said, "This is her." And then Ata said to Ibn Abbas, "Tell me her story." He said, "When this woman was young," because Ata is not a companion, Ata is a tabi'i, so this is an old story. But the woman is old now. Ibn Abbas says, "When this woman was young," he said, "this woman came to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. She said, 'Ya Rasulullah, I have a terrible illness. I have epilepsy, and it's a disease that I've been suffering from for many, many years. You have to be aware of something. Any dua that a Rasulullah does is answered. But it's amazing that a lot of the companions never asked him for favors.'" Subhanallah, it is as if the companions were believing in the dua, its power, but not taking this as a justification to sit and to wait for Rasulullah's dua to be admitted to Jannah. And this woman was one of them. So she says, "Ya Rasulullah, I had this illness." And Rasulullah understood that it's an indirect complaint, but he gave her an option. He said, and what a fascinating option. He said to her, "If you want, I can make dua for you and you will be healed. And if you want, you be patient with your disease and you will go to Jannah." Brothers and sisters, I ask you, if you had a son or a daughter who had cancer and you had a Rasulullah coming to you and you said, "Ya Rasulullah, make dua for my son to be treated from cancer." And Rasulullah says, "If you want, I can do it now and you can go home and she or he are excellent and will not die. Or you become patient, he will die, but he will go to Jannah. What will you choose?" There will be a struggle. I think the best standard answer is, "Can't I have them both?" That's maybe the best diplomatic standard answer. "Ya Rasulullah, make dua, and inshallah make dua as well, that when she or he are treated, that they go to Jannah." There was no argumentation. There was no bargaining. There was no negotiation. She said, "Ya Rasulullah, I will accept the second option. I will be patient. But I have a problem. Here I need your dua. When I have this epilepsy, I begin to be uncovered. So please, at least make dua that when I have it, I don't become naked or uncovered." Look at the midst of this disease and illness, what this woman is thinking about. Does a sister today think, okay, maybe I shouldn't say this, but this concept of covering and uncovering, is it an issue to some sisters? Here, we are not talking about hijab. Here, we are talking about a naked leg or a naked feet or something that shouldn't appear. And even if it does appear, she has no control over it. But even then, she doesn't want this to happen. And she lived with epilepsy for a tabi'i to see and witness a walking woman in heaven. I sometimes think about this woman and say to myself, how did this woman used to behave? How did this woman used to interact with society? Knowing that she will go to Jannah. If I told you now, you are going to Jannah. I don't know, maybe you will stop praying or something. But this woman, as if Rasulullah ﷺ did not promise her, she wasn't going saying, who would like to see a woman from Jannah? Pay 50 pence or whatever, come and see me. It was the society that was talking about her from her back. And she doesn't care about that society because she has already guaranteed her place in Jannah. Isn't this the highest aspiration? What is the high? You know why I chose her story, this woman? Because she had aspirations. You have aspirations. You want to get married and you want to work and you want and you want and you want and you want to go to Jannah. Now this woman, it is as if she is making a statement that I have ceased to think about anything in life. I have ceased to think about a potential husband that once he knows that I have this illness, he will not get married to me. I will not be a good mother. I will have problems with society. I have ceased to have ambitions and interests in these things that you have interests in. Nothing interests me in this life except going to Jannah. And therefore, I did not have a second chance or thought when Rasulullah ﷺ put it as an option for me. I didn't hesitate. Now, if this is not himma, what is it then? What is it? And that's why I would not blame you or blame myself if I said, oh, I just want you to heal this cancer or AIDS or epilepsy. Because this is a minority now. How many people did Ata ibn Abi Rabah see walking men or women in Jannah? How many? This was a single hadith said about a single woman. Ibn Ata did not say, okay, show me the following day. Oh, you showed me yesterday a woman. Show me a man now. Give me an example. She was the only single human being that he was aware of during his lifetime of someone who was going to go to Jannah. Didn't I tell you we are talking about a minority? This was the story of someone who we don't know her name. Another story of another woman. Sumayya bint Hubat, the mother of Ammar ibn Yasir. She was a servant. She was a slave. And therefore, she was tortured by her masters for accepting Islam. She was tortured, her husband was tortured, and her son was tortured. Do you know how they used to torture people during this time? They used to dress them in clothes made of iron and put them on the hot sand, 12 o'clock noon, and leave them there. Not just leave them naked in the sand. It's like putting them in a microwave, putting them in an oven. Because the best way to heat and to burn someone is to stick a hot piece of iron next to his or her body. That's how they were tortured. And it's not for a couple of hours. It's for many hours until the sun sets. Sometimes they would ask the children to fiddle with your eyes and put their fingers in your eyes until the eye comes out of your face. That's what some used to do. And this is in the books of history. And this is some of what has happened to Bilal. Now this happened to Sumayya. And it happened to her husband. And it happened to her son. Have you ever wondered why Sumayya was the only person who was killed from the three, because both male, the husband and the son, compromised and gave into what the mushrikeen wanted them to say, that Ammar ibn Yasir went weeping to Ar-Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and said, "Ya Rasulallah, they forced me to say that God was this small living organism creeping on the sand. And I'm crying because I said it. I had to say it. Allah is ju'l." And Rasulullah said to him, "But what do you feel inside?" He said, "Wallahi, I know who is Allah." So the verses were revealed, "Illa man ukriha wa qalbuhu mutma'innun bil iman." Those who are forced upon to say words or actions of kufr, Allah will not punish them, provided that they have this peaceful conviction in their heart that Allah is one. The point I'm trying to say to you, that they have already had the permission to compromise. This is number one. Number two, they have already been given the good news of going to Jannah. So Ammar ibn Yasir, when he compromised, he was already aware that he was going to Jannah. You are aware of Rasulullah's words to them, "Sabran ala Yasir, fa inna maw'idukum al Jannah." Be patient, O family of Yasir, because you are promised Jannah. So that means you are promised Jannah. The father compromised, and then he was exempted. And Ammar ibn Yasir compromised. Sumayya did not. They said to her, "Say Allah is this." She said, "Ahadun ahad." They said, "Say Allah is that." "Ahadun ahad." Until she provoked Abu Jahl. And Abu Jahl said to her, "I know why you became a Muslim. Because you were attracted to Muhammad. Because of his good looks." She spat on his face. And she made him crazy. And he put the spear in her private part and he killed her. I am talking again about a minority. Not every man could bear this. There were lots of men that were defeated and compromised and went crying and weeping to Rasulullah. And that's why Sumayya is not famous for anything that she did for Islam except this moment, because she did not live to see Medina. She did not live to see Khaybar or Uhud or Badr. But these two moments that she resisted, these two moments that she spat on the face of this, were enough to grant her an admission to the minority club. If she have given in, if she cried, she would be like Ammar. She would be like her husband. She would be like X and Y and Z. She would be like the norm, the standard. This is high aspiration. I don't want you again to feel frustrated, because this is a special private club for private people. You are welcome to go, but you need to be prepared for the conditions of membership. I am done with two now. I am left with a fascinating example, which I will end Himma with. And this example, you can even Google this example if you want, because it's available in French, in German, in English. It's a story of a fascinating woman called Khawla bint al-Azwar. And I don't want to say everything about Khawla. Her story is available and is accessible in English, and she is famous. But I will tell you something. For the last month, I've been preparing this course since February. For the last month, I sometimes, like this, when I'm looking at the ceiling, I say, what if I was sitting in a house and all the women that I spoke about, I could see them? I could see Khawla, I could see Nusayba, and see them engaged with each other, introducing each other. This is coming from the 18th century. This is coming. I know that you think I am mad, but this is the sort of thing. And how does she look? And is she fat? Is she short? Is she tall? Is she white? Is she black? When she speaks, does she speak eloquently? Or her voice, is she shy? How does she look? Can I get a glimpse, a taste of what these characters were? Were they human beings? Did she know how to cook? How did she used to pray? If I read Quran to her, will she listen to me? Or will she say, what is this? You can't even read properly. I'll show you how to read. I sometimes think about these things. And really, my respect for these people goes up and up and up, higher than you think. And that's why I said to you from the beginning, I am grateful to IslamicCourses.com for actually giving me this opportunity. I say, if it was not for this course, I, as a man or a male, would never have bought the 20, 30 books about women. Why should I read about it? This is me. I might have read about women before marriage, but I have an open book at home, so after marriage. So why should I read about women? It was because of this opportunity that I was forced to read, and I have learned a lot, a lot. And I am sorry that I have two lines of brothers, because the rest of the brothers thought that this is a women's course. Wallahi masakin, they don't know what they are missing. All these mad ideas were inspired from this lady, Khawla bint al-Azwar. That however much I read her story, I cannot cease to be amazed. I think Khawla, if she had a fight with me, she will kill me. Khawla bint al-Azwar is a great personality. She did not see Rasulullah, but she saw the rest of the companions. Khawla bint al-Azwar never got married, but her relationship with her brother Dirar was so powerful. She loved him a lot. And when a woman loves, she loves. Rabi' al-Adawiyya loved Allah. And this is what happens when a woman loves Allah. Khadija or Aisha loved her husband. Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, this is what happens when a woman loves her husband. Abu Hanifa loved his mother. So much so that when his mother just passes in a circle and he's teaching in that circle, he would say, come on, you go home, all students. Study, the circle is cancelled. My mother needs me. Who would do this when he is on his mobile? And a mother calls you from the kitchen. You would say to your mother, wait, mother, I'm on the phone. This is what happens when someone loves his mother and when a mother loves her son. Khawla is a story of what a woman would do when she is in love with her brother. Now, Dirar is a great, brave warrior, Mujahid. He did not fear anyone. It's amazing that Dirar taught his sister how to fight. The skill of using the sword, she knows it. The skill of using the spears, she knows it. Martial arts, she knows it. Through her brother. Her relationship with her brother is so intimate. So what happens, therefore, if something bad happens to Dirar? She will become mad. And that's actually what has happened. In one of the battles called Ajanadin, Dirar was captured and taken as a hostage. And Khawla became mad. For one, she was not aware whether he is dead or alive. And of course, if he is dead, she would become mad. But on her suspicion that he might be alive, she decided to rescue him. Have you seen The Rock? Have you seen any American movie which is about rescuing hostages? There are a lot, aren't they? Okay, this is not a movie. This is a real story of a woman trying to rescue her brother from the territories of the Romans. And the Romans are excellent, and you know this, fighters. They are not on donkeys with swords. No, they are excellent fighters, powerful fighters. What does she do? She wears her armor. And now when she wears her armor, no one knows that she is a woman. And she goes and fights. I would like you to visualize and imagine now that you are watching this movie. You are watching someone coming from a distance, wearing his armored clothes. You would assume that he is a man or a male, and you would see him approaching the enemy. The enemy is armored as well. And on the other side, the Muslim army, composed wholly and solely of men. And you see this woman or man zooming into the enemy and engaging in a fight with 20, 30, this is not an Indian movie, this is a real movie, engaging with 20, 30 people and being able to fight them and to defeat them. At that time, the Muslim army was led by Khalid ibn al-Walid. When you say Khalid, it's military skills. The Muslim people in the army that are watching this armed person fighting said that this is Khalid. This is Khalid ibn al-Walid. This can be no one except Khalid. And suddenly, they saw Khalid coming from the right hand of the army. And they were shocked. If that is not Khalid, then who is he? And one of the Muslims in the army, called Rafi' ibn Umayra, went to Khalid ibn Walid, said, Khalid, I thought that was you. He said, no, that's not me. But I am wondering like you, who is he? He said, this is the first time I see someone fighting in this power and this strength and this energy. To impress Khalid, that means you are something special. When you impress a great person, that means you are equally or more great. You are more great or equally at least, but not less. Otherwise, the great will not be impressed by a lesser greater. Isn't that right? Khalid sees this man fighting and killing and fighting, and the Roman army is retreating. Of course, there are other people that are fighting, but you can see it's like in football, there is a certain player that making an impact. Yes, there are other players with him, but you can see this is making an impact. So he can see this mobile fighter fighting here and there, fighting here and there. And if you were like watching the gladiator, you would zoom your camera into one fighter in the entire army because he is the one that is creating an impact. Khalid runs after this soldier and with his horse revolves around him and says, show me your face, tell me your name. By Allah, show me your face. By Allah, you fought like a great, great fighter. And the person is not answering. And Khalid felt a little bit suspicious. And then, please, tell me your name. And one person said to him, come on, speak to the Amir al-Mu'mineen in the battle. Khalid is asking you, what's your name? And then a feminine voice comes out of the armor. And she says, Wallahi ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, it's not out of rudeness that I am not answering your question, but I am a woman. I am not a man. I am not Khalid. And Khalid said, who are you? She said, I am Khawla, bint al-Azwar. And then he said to her, and why did you do what you did? She said, because I lost my brother, and I'm not sure if he's dead or alive. So I thought to fight them in case he is a hostage and then I can rescue him. He took her and they went to their military bases. And during the day she was crying and crying and crying, Dirar, where are you, Dirar? Are you? And she began to say poetry, and I have the poetry. Dirar, are you alive or dead? Where are you, Dirar? Khawla is crying for you. Khalid felt sorry for her. So he brought Rafi' ibn Umayra, the one that I told you about, who was the second man in the army. He said, Rafi', look at this poor sister. Can't you check if he's dead or alive for her? He said, okay, I'll try to check. He had a hostage, a Roman hostage. This Roman hostage confessed at the end, and he said to him, look, are you aware of someone that you captured as hostage called Dirar? He said, Dirar, Dirar, Dirar. Oh, yes. I know him. He fought like a man and he fought like a lion and he killed 40 Romans and he killed our military leader. Yes, yes. He said, where is he? He said, he is hostage in Homs in Damascus. So he's alive? Yes, he's alive. He's a hostage. Rafi' ibn Umayra goes to tell Khalid, Khalid, Amir al-Mu'mineen, he is alive. Khalid goes and tells Khawla, Khawla, good news. Your brother is alive. Or if you want, he is alive. Mashallah, good news. But he's a hostage. But don't worry. We will rescue him. He asked Rafi'. Khalid ibn Walid asked Rafi'. He said, Rafi', I want you to rescue him. Do anything that you can to rescue him. He said, how many soldiers do you need? Rafi' said, I need 100 soldiers. But I'm going to select them. They need to be top of the range. They need to be excellent fighters. So I'm going to choose them. And he chose 100 men. And then he said, salam to Khalid, I'm going to go to Homs. Khawla ibn al-Azwar said, Where are you going to? They said, we are going to leave. We are going to rescue Dirar. She said, okay, salamu alaykum, go and may Allah be with you. No. She said, I'm coming with you. Rafa said, no, but this is a male mission. You can't come with us. She said, no, I'm coming with you. Yes, but we are 100 top of the range. Arnold Schwarzenegger, I don't know who. We are all of the muscular people taking steroids day and night. She said, I don't care. I'm coming with you. Rafi' goes to Khalid and says, she wants to come. Khalid says, you saw how she fought, didn't you? So she's not going to be a burden. Take her with you. And they took her with them. And the historians tell us, and I can visualize it, that 100 people were on their horses going to Homs, and a distance, and one soldier at the back following because of not to mingle and mix with the... Can you see it? 100? Space, a woman at the back. But not a woman to yell and to... No, be careful. No, she's coming to fight with the 100. They went and... She went with them and they fought and they rescued Dirar. The story ends, but there is another occasion, there is another situation. Khawla continued to fight wars and battles so as not to get the impression that she's just fighting for the sake of her brother. But whenever there is a battle, she fights. She's not treating the injured and bringing water. She's actually fighting. In one battle, she and a group of women were taken hostages. By the Romans again. The leader of the Roman army fell in love with her. He said to his army members, no one gets closer to her, no one mistreats her. After we defeat the Muslims, I'm going to marry her. She is aware of that, but she doesn't care less. In the night, they were put together, and I think they were shackled, but somewhere in the middle of the... Because this is in a battlefield. So Khawla, in the middle of the night... began to speak to the rest of the women. Are you going to accept this humiliation? Are you going to accept this capture? Do you know what it means to be captured by those Romans? Those pagans? Are you going to accept that? Some of the women said to her, "But yes, but we don't have any horses. We don't have any swords." Look at a woman now that thinks about alternatives. She said, "Yes, but we have the pigs." So she said, "Yes, but we have these." And wallahi, sisters and brothers, she took this... thing from the tents, and she shouted. Have you seen, you've seen Gladiator, some of you, where when they fight with the animals and with those, he says to them, let's keep together, let's close and be in a circle together, don't keep apart from each other. This is exactly what Khawla ibn Azwar said, look, if we wanted to fight those Romans, we have to stick together, we should not depart from each other. And everyone holding a stick. And whenever she sees a Roman, straight away on the top of his head. And they did exactly that. 5 Romans came. And this is maybe like an Indian movie now. 5 Romans came, they were killed. 10 Romans came, they were killed. The one who is in love with her from the Romans, I think this should be turned into a movie. The one who was in love with her said to her, Khawla, what are you doing? Are you going to kill me? After this has ended, I will marry you and we will live in the greatest palace in Damascus. She said, wallahi, to get married to the worst person in the Muslim community is far more better than to get married to you. Then she actually continues to fight. And he says to her, wallahi, I can kill you, but I don't want to kill you. I love you. She says, kill me if you're a man. And he approaches and approaches. And she approaches and approaches. And at that moment, the Muslim army comes, headed by Khalid ibn al-Walid, Rafi' ibn Umayra, saying, Takbir, Allahu Akbar. And all the Romans run away. And all these hostages become cut and loose. And they come. And Dirar is one of them. And she jumps on the horse and say to the rest of the women, look, this is how we can gain our freedom again. And they went back. Who can do this? I can't do it. This is Khawla bint al-Azwar. قولوا قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه إنه الغفور الرحيم.